Hello, friends. This is Andy Atwell welcoming you to Come, Let Us Reason Together. This next half hour will be dedicated to putting the Bible back into its number one place in the hearts and minds of mankind. Throughout the centuries, the Bible remained the number one book sold. Only today has it taken a back shelf position in men's lives and minds. Even Christian bookstores have more books about the Bible than the Bible itself. The Bible is the only book written by God, and in it alone is found the pathway to life. Come now, let us reason together with Gilbert Larson and his friends.
Hello, everyone. It's time to get your Bible and grab a cup of coffee. This is Gilbert from Red Bluff, California.
And this is Andy from Vancouver, Washington.
We are in the fourth of the Good News, the Gospels. This is a book that was handed down to John. It's God speaking. The Bible is all given by inspiration of God. It's God-breathed, actually, is what the scripture says. That's what that word means in the Greek. This is God's voice. It's written over a 1,600-year period of time. It's given to 100 different men, and they're all saying the same things, but it's from different angles. It's different details, like if you're a cameraman and you're shooting this moving picture and you're looking at it from the north, you've got one angle on it, and then you're looking at it from the east, you've got another angle, and it's down to, let's say, the first one is Matthew, then Mark, then Luke, and it's handed down to Luke, but it's not about Luke. He just happens to be the one that writes about it, and it's looking at it from another angle. Then we get a four-way picture all the way around, all topographic, all three-dimensional, all full color, and way better than the Old Testament, which is a shadow or an outline. Sometimes that scripture is that word is an outline. It's a rough sketch or a shadow of what is talked about in the Gospels. You can't get a better place than the Gospels to get this picture. But what's really fun, it's like that word shub. In the New Testament, it says change your mind, but that shadow really fills in some details, though, doesn't it, Andy, with returning back to the beginning where we were with God. Wonderful, wonderful pictures. But we're starting in the right place in these Gospels that are handed down to these four men. And we're in John chapter 18. And this context or this full thought, like a paragraph, that's how the Bible was written. It was not written verse by verse. Anybody that chops it up verse by verse is wrong. It's not cut up that fine. It's cut into paragraphs or context. Now, sometimes the context is just one verse, you know, that we see, that we know. It's small, maybe like it's one sentence. But then there's those, how about that one? Was it Mark that had a lot of ands in it, just like Revelation? You noticed.
Oh, yeah. It kept going and that was a, what would we call that?
Passage.
A passage. And it went on for some pages.
Yes.
Because it was the same thing.
Well, so does Revelation.
And he was plussing them together to not get you dropped away from it. Here, listen to the whole story here.
And some people break up Revelation into these wrong cuts. You have to understand it like a snowball is adding, and it ends up being one snowball. But if you were to slice it, you would see it's different layers as it's rolled down the hill. Sometimes it's better to just keep going and keep reading for a while. And it's really better when you read several chapters. We read three chapters, except for we do a psalm or a proverb. Some people read a psalm and a proverb and three other chapters in the Bible every day. It's really good to read that, to go over big areas of it, at least. So we're doing about four chapters, sometimes five chapters a day when we read, and you read through the whole Bible every year. It's wonderful to do it that way. It really changes you. We are in John chapter 18. We are verses 15 to 18.
And Simon Peter followed Jesus, and so did another disciple. Now that disciple was known to the high priest and entered with Jesus into the court of the high priest, but Peter was standing at the door without. So the other disciple who was known to the high priest went out and spoke to the doorkeeper and brought in Peter. The maid doorkeeper therefore said to Peter, "Are you also one of the disciples of this man?" He says, "I am not." Now the bondman and the officers were standing there, having made a fire of charcoal, for it was cold, and they were warming themselves. And Peter also was with them, standing and warming himself.
Warming himself. He used to call my cat himself because he had such a big ego. He's a big orange Maine Coon that was getting up to 25 pounds. Andy would want to take him down into the basement as his little mascot when he'd go to sleep. And I think he was afraid of burglars breaking in, but our cat was such a foreboding force. He was just such a presence that Andy called himself. He had to wake up Andy. Andy wasn't going to get up on his own. He would tap Andy several times on the head to get him to get up in the morning.
He did, yes. That was funny.
No, he needed his buddy. What really was, he needed some pets, so he'd tap Andy on the head. But anyway, here's Peter for the first time denying him. This is number one.
Yeah.
Whoa. And you know what? When this all came to pass and Jesus died, Peter wept. But he was forgiven, but he was the one given the keys, right back in Luke 19 through 25. What do you have to say about this? Anything you picked up on?
Oh, nothing. It's just setting up the story, it looks like to me. And he denied him.
I am not. That's what he said.
Yep. The high priest therefore asked Jesus of his disciples and of his teaching. Jesus answered him, "I have openly spoken to the world. I ever taught in the synagogue and in the temple where all the Jews come together. And in secret I spoke I nothing. Why askest thou me? Ask them that have heard what I spake to them about. Behold, these know what things I said." And when he had said these words, one of the officers standing by gave Jesus a blow, saying, "Answerest thou the high priest thus?" Jesus answered him, "If I have spoken evil, witness of the evil, but if well, why smitest thou me?" Annas therefore sent him bound unto Caiaphas, the high priest.
Where does it say he smote him? He struck him?
He said he smited him.
What verse is that? 22?
That's in 23.
23. Wow, can you imagine striking Jesus? Really? He was an officer of the high priest, and he smacks the high priest, Jesus. He strikes the king. And that's forgivable, but when people realize they do that, yikes. 25 through 27.
Now Simon Peter was standing and warming himself. They said therefore to him, "Art thou also one of the disciples?" He denied and said, "I am not." One of the bondmen of the high priest, being a kinsman of him, whose ear Peter cut off, says, "Did I not see you in the garden with him?" Peter therefore denied again, and straightway a cock crew, or a rooster crowed.
He denied him the third time, and isn't that interesting? 27 verse. So that's the three times. Yep. It's still the preparation of the Passover. It's not the Passover itself. That happens when Jesus dies on the cross. This is all part of that supper. And it started back in chapter 13 with the foot washing. 28 through 32.
They led Jesus, therefore, from Caiaphas unto the praetorium, and it was early, and themselves entered not into the praetorium, that they be not defiled, but might eat the Passover. Pilate therefore went out unto them and says, "What accusation bring you against this man?" They answered and said to him, "If this man were not doing evil, we would not have delivered him up to thee." Pilate therefore said to them, "Take ye him and judge him according to your law." The Jews said to him, "It is not lawful for us to put anyone to death, that the word of Jesus be fulfilled, which he spoke, signifying what manner of death he should die."
What accusation should I bring against this man? Even Pilate, who handed him over to death, He was questioning them. Are you sure? In another place, it says that he knew they did it for envy. He knew they had bad motives.
That comes out in another piece, right?
And he knew they were naughty, that it was jealousy. 33 through 37.
Pilate therefore entered again into the praetorium and called Jesus and said to him, "Art thou the king of the Jews?" Jesus answered, "Sayest thou this of yourself, or did others tell thee concerning me?" Pilate answered, "Am I a Jew? Thy nation and the chief priests delivered you to me. What hast you done?" Jesus answered, "My kingdom is not of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, my servants would fight, that I be not delivered to the Jews. But now my kingdom not hence." Pilate answered and said to him, "Art thou king then?" Jesus answered, "Thou sayest that I am a king. I to this end have been born, and to this end I am come into the world, that I should witness to the truth. Everyone that is of the truth hears my voice." Pilate says to him, "What is the truth?"
People don't know it, do they? And you can be the most educated person in the world. You could be the highest political figure, like Pontius Pilate was up there. He had some authority, and he goes, "What is truth?" And aren't political officials, shouldn't they know the truth, Andy? But do they? I mean, look at our officials today. What do you rate them for truth? What do you really rate some of these politicians that have all these multi-million dollar bank accounts? What do you think about their truth button? They get richer and richer the longer they stay in office. Is there something wrong with that? I thought they were public servants, or they make servants of the people, really. I get out of politics. I don't care about it anymore because we have another kingdom. It's called the kingdom of the heavens. So it says we're not to be of this world, right?
It does. Be in the world, but don't be of the world.
If my kingdom were of this world, my servants would fight. He's not talking about the kingdom of this world. He's back to, all goes back to Matthew, the kingdom of repent, change your mind, because the kingdom of the heavens is at hand. He's not in competition with these rulers here on the earth. And some people make church into a political rally. What do you think about that, Andy? Doesn't work, does it?
Well, it's just, yeah, that doesn't make any sense. Jesus wouldn't have done that.
Yeah.
I mean,
what are you going to do with this, with something that's in our hearts? And you can't teach that as a political science, is it?
No, it makes no sense at all. It's not even connected.
Not connected. Okay, 38 through the end of the chapter, 18 through 40.
And having said this, he went out again unto the Jews and said to them, "I have found no crime in him. But you have a custom that I should release you one at the Passover. Will you therefore that I release to you the king of the Jews?" They cried therefore again, saying, "No, not this man, but Barabbas." Now Barabbas was a robber.
We almost have to read this next one to see how bad they got, because they chose... They emptied the prisons. It almost sounds like the way they're judging today, that criminals are being put in a place that is more forgiving than the law abiders in the world. Can you see this kingdom that was there then, that was told to Nebuchadnezzar, there would be four kingdoms, and the two iron legs that would go on down and decay or get smaller and smaller into these 10 iron toes mixed with clay. So you see that same thing going on, that their judgments are all skewed off, that they chose that the Barabbas being a thief, and people died, or he actually started a sedition and people died in it from what I understand. And they chose him to be released versus Jesus. But here's the funny part about this whole thing. Actually, we needed Jesus to die.
It had to happen.
It had to. That was the only way we were going to be saved, because we couldn't be saved on our own merits. There is not one thing of our individual merits that is works salvation for us, it is only through God's kindness and mercy and that propitiation, which is a funny word.
It is.
It's really funny, Andrew. Tell them what that
word
is.
Where else would you find that word?
Yeah.
If people read right across it, yeah.
You know, it's a
propitiation. Yeah.
Yeah. Propitiation for the forgiveness and the greatest thing. But think of the word, Andy. What is that word?
Well, I believe one of the teachings that our friend Ray had on it, it said that that had to do with the way that God shows mercy to the sinner.
Right.
Now, I don't know where that word is even used.
But you know the word.
Well, yeah, I know the word, but I mean, it's not in the Bible many times.
Are you going to tell people? Or are you going to hold it to yourself?
You mean what?
The word for propitiation, the Greek word.
Oh, what is it?
Hilarious.
Hilarious. Well, that is it.
You know, Andy, it just slipped his mind, but that happens to me too. But you talked about it the other day.
Oh, Andy. I know. Sorry. Hilarious. That is hilarious.
Andy knows what it is. Sometimes we have to jar each other's minds. Isn't that a wild? But can you imagine, well, what would you think if they're strapping you up, and let's say you're going to go through a painful death. You don't just get the drug. You're going to be in an electric chair where you get fried. And you're strapped up. They're ready to pull it down. They got it all energized, and you're going to get those so many volts. And the governor calls up and said, we got him taken care of. Unstrap him.
Now, that would be hilarious. Not that.
Isn't that funny? The word for forgiveness, asthene is one word for forgiveness, but I'm talking about everything Jesus did, his death, his blood, and his resurrection is all wrapped up into the propitiation, the means by which God shows mercy to sinners, which is the Greek word hilaios, hilarious. What?
What?
Well, that, you know, Makarios.
Well, I guess if you were the one receiving of such a thing, it would be hilarious.
It's so hilarious that we have gotten something we did not deserve. It's so far overboard. And through it, we're adopted into the family. God comes into us. He invites us into his family. He surrounds us. He's not only within us, he's around us. We eat at his table. We're called his sons. He pulls out all stops. He even gives his own son for us.
And that's just overwhelmingly wonderful.
It is way over the top.
It is.
You know, Andy and I get so going on different tangents. Sometimes we forget these things that are really important. I do exactly the same thing. And we have to ask for hints from each other.
Help.
Yeah. Well, we've been doing this for 45 to 55 years, 54 years. I shouldn't exaggerate. 54, not 55. Anyway, so what? How far do we get here? We're in 19 now, right?
Chapter 19.
Verses, what's the context
here? A long
one
looks like 16. Yes?
You're right. It's 16.
Chapter.
1 through 16, yep.
Pilate, therefore, took Jesus then and scourged him, and the soldiers platted a crown of thorns and put it on his head and arrayed him in a purple garment and came unto him and said, Hail, King of the Jews, and they gave him blows. And Pilate went outside again and said to them, Behold, I bring him out to you, that you may know that I find no crime in him. Jesus therefore came outside wearing the thorny crown and the purple garment. And Pilate said to them, Behold the man. When therefore the chief priests and the officers saw him, they cried out, saying, Crucify, crucify him. Pilate to them, Take ye him and crucify, for I find no crime in him. And Jews answered him, We have a law, and according to the law he ought to die, because he made himself God's son. When Pilate therefore heard this word, he was the more afraid, and he entered into the praetorium again and said to Jesus, Whence art thou? but Jesus gave him no answer.
In other words, where'd you come from?
Yeah. Pilate therefore said to him, "Speakest thou not to me? Knowest not that I have the authority to release thee and have authority to crucify thee?" Jesus answered him, "Thou would have no authority against me except it were given thee from above. Therefore, who delivers me into thee has the greater sin." Upon this, Pilate sought to release him, but the Jews cried out, saying, "If thou release this man, thou art not Caesar's friend. Everyone that makes himself king speaks against Caesar." When Pilate therefore heard these words, he brought Jesus out and sat down on the judgment seat at the place called the pavement, but in Hebrew, Gabbatha. Now it was the preparation of the Passover. It was about the sixth hour. And he saith to the Jews, "Behold your king." They therefore cried out, "Away with him, away with him, crucify him." Says Pilate to them, "Shall I crucify your king?" The chief priests answered, "We have no king but Caesar." Then therefore he delivered him to them to be crucified.
What would you do if you saw Billy Graham say, "Crucify him"? These are the religious leaders of the highest religious of the leaders of the day. How about if you heard Jimmy Swaggart say, "Crucify him"? Or any one of the other, I don't know, even the Pope. How would you feel if you heard the Pope say, "Crucify him"? What would you think about your religion? This is the highest religious people of the day. We want to divorce ourselves and just say, "Oh, it's just the Jews." You know, everybody always wants to say, "Well, it's somebody else," and then they do exactly the same thing, and it's really them. They've joined in on it. And yet, here are four times Pilate sought to release him. In chapter 18, "I find no crime in him," verse 39. And in 19, verse 4, "I find no crime in him." And in verse 6 of 19, "I find no crime in him." And verse 11, "And upon this Pilate sought to release him. But the Jews cried out," the ones, or you can just say the Christians cried out, or anybody that should be worshiping, and they betray him because they're so set in their ways. And it seems like the political leaders had some sympathy for him. Isn't that interesting? Pilate did. And he was corrupt. And yet, in this, he was, well, Pilate's wife had a dream in one of these Gospels.
Yeah, don't.
Have nothing to do with this man. Wasn't that her words?
Mm-hmm.
She had a dream, a bad dream. Now, in this context, we are at the sixth hour. Now, this is actually from John chapter 13 to right now, John chapter 19. Did you realize it's just a few hours? It's going by hour by hour.
It's 6 o'clock in the morning there. And then when he went out, he was there in the afternoon. He went, it's not even 20 hours.
It's not even a day.
It's not a day. It couldn't be a day.
From chapter 13 till now, it's just hours.
It's hours. It's not a day. Yeah.
Now it's getting to the last 3 hours before the New Testament. And what big thing did you see there?
No, it's just Pilate just didn't want to have anything to do with it. And then he says, "Shall I crucify your king?" They wanted him to do it, but then they put him at odds with Caesar if he didn't do it.
Yeah.
They were manipulating him, and he let him.
They manipulated politics.
That's what they did right
there. I wonder how many times religious people try to manipulate politics.
Well, if they're not true God followers, they do it all the time.
Some, like Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, were friends and advisors to the highest power, to Nebuchadnezzar.
Oh,
he would be like an emperor, a king, or the highest ruler in the country at that time, in Babylon. And he really liked them, and if they stood against him in something that was ungodly, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they said, "We don't need to think on this. We're done." You know, they basically said, "Throw us in the fiery furnace." And so they cranked up the heat, and they were thrown in, and they were three of them, and all of a sudden Nebuchadnezzar sees, well, there's four. And he starts talking to them, doesn't he? Which is an interesting scenario. And he says, does he say come out? Does he tell Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, does Nebuchadnezzar say to come out? Anyway, you can look that up and see. It's kind of an interesting thing that happens. Well, anyway, we can have relations with political people, but we should only be looking out for God's kids, their welfare, like Esther was told to do by her uncle, Mordecai. And we should be helping the king to find God. Like you see, well, they advised the king, Daniel did, and they became in government. And it only happens just a few places. Elijah and Elisha didn't. They kept totally separate. But that's Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego is a very interesting scenario, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
It's funny how God looked at his relationship sometimes separate from politics, but sometimes involved in it, like Esther was. So there were five people involved, Esther. Well, Mordecai, six. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and Daniel. Those are fun stories when you really think about them. And then you find political leaders in our country that shouldn't be involved because their motives are not. They're not God's motives.
Set your mind on the things above.
On the things above.
And not on the things that are on the earth. For you have died.
For you have died.
And your life is hidden with Christ. With Christ in God.
Therefore,
if you have been raised up with Christ, keep seeking the things above, where Christ is seated at the right hand of God. Seated at the right hand of God.
Set your mind
on the things above,
on the things above,
and not on the things that are on the earth. For you have died,
for you have died,
and your life is hidden with Christ in God.
When Christ, who is our life, is revealed,
then you will also be revealed with him in glory, in glory.
Set your mind
on the things above,
on the things above,
and not on the things that are on the earth. For you have died,
for you have died,
and your life is hidden with Christ in God, with Christ in God.
We're coming to an end. We're running out of time, and it's been fun being with you. And until we meet again, may God lead you into all truth.
You can contact Gilbert and his friends at www.gilbertandfriends.com. That's www.gilbertandfriends.com. Or write to him, Gilbert and Friends, P.O. Box 820347, Vancouver, Washington 98682. That's P.O. Box 820347, Vancouver, Washington 98682. Or call us at 360-600-6726. That's 360-600-6726. We invite your comments as we reason together through the Bible. Thank you for joining us on Come Let Us Reason Together and reminding you all to eat a healthy breakfast every morning. Our favorite breakfast is the Bible because it is written, "Man does not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God."